Today, we're going to talk about a little bit about making mistakes. In fact, this is an interview that we did a while back. You can spend hours laughing at the mistakes people make while composing messages meant that for reading, either on paper or on a screen. Just leave one letter out, and that can change to the whole meaning, to the opposite of what was meant. We explored this back in the summer of 2014 with Drummond Moyer. He's the creator of the book, Just My Typo. Here's Jeffrey Riley with that interview.
A little mistake in writing can make for a big difference in meaning. Just leaving out a little word or even just a letter can vastly change what a writer intended to write. So typographical errors induce cringes in the creators and often laughter, side-splitting laughter among readers. It is in that spirit that today's guest assembled a book of some of the best errors he's run across. The book is called Just My Typo, From Sinning with the Choir to the Untied States. Our compiler and our guest is Drummond Moyer. He's worn many hats, teacher, musician, and comedy performer in groups at Oxford University. He was an editor and publisher at Random House and now is editorial director at Scepter. Just My Typo first arrived 2 years ago in a British edition. The paperback out this year is an American edition. Drummond Moyer, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi there, Jeffrey. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Tell us, if you would, how broad or subtle are the differences between the UK and the US versions of Just My Typo?
Probably about 10% of the material that's in the U.S. edition is new for that edition. There weren't that many new ones to add, but there were occasionally, you know, a few things that were just too funny not to include in the new edition. So, for example, recently the Vatican issued a large number of gold papal medals. But they managed to misspell the word Jesus on them. So that was fairly entertaining when that happened. We thought we'd put that in the U.S. edition.
How did they spell the word Jesus?
Yeah, they managed to misspell. They spelled it with an L. They spelled it Lesus instead of Jesus.
Oh no!
Which is just the kind of thing that happens. A similar thing happened in Chile actually many years ago. There was a 50 peso coin a few years ago that was minted. 1.5 million of these coins were minted, and they managed to misspell the word Chile. They left the L out. And unfortunately, the guy who ran the Chile mint actually lost his job through that, so it wasn't really that funny. But this is just the kind of thing that happens sometimes. So there are some funny new ones in the U.S. edition. There's also a few, I hate to say it, there were actually a couple of mistakes in the U.K. edition that we managed to let slip in. So they've been corrected for the American edition as well.
That must be a certain sense of terror, though, is when you're writing a book about typographical errors, you really don't want to make any of your own, do you?
You really don't, but unfortunately, I mean, the one I was very embarrassed about, there was two. I managed to misspell someone's name in the acknowledgements, which was fairly embarrassing. The other one was, I've got a whole chapter in the book on biblical misprints, you know, misprints from the Bible. Uh-huh. And one of them I claimed came from the 199th Psalm, whereas, of course, there aren't that many Psalms. And quite a few eagle-eyed people wrote in to tell me that actually, what I actually meant to write was 119th Psalm. What I typed instead was 199th. So anyone who buys a U.S. edition will get a completely 100% correct edition.
We hope, anyway. Nobody sent you the notice back to say, whoops, you missed something here.
Not yet, but obviously if anyone spots one, you know, please do go ahead and let us know. I'm pretty sure the U.S. edition's watertight, though.
This is such a rich vein of material, Drummond. I mean, it's really a gift that keeps on giving because new mistakes are made basically every minute, aren't they?
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean, it's been tremendous fun putting it together, and it's been a lot of fun researching and getting everyone to send me their favorites. I mean, because, you know, they go back centuries. I mean, Chaucer, the father of English poetry, he wrote a poem about typos because he got so cross at them. Caxton, the father of printing, he used to actually issue books that requested that their readers correct the mistakes that they find in his books because they were so riddled with typos. There's quite possibly a typo in the Declaration of Independence. You know, they go all the way back, lots of biblical ones, as you mentioned before. And pretty much every week I hear another story of, you know, a government or a writer or a politician or a mathematician or, you know, someone somewhere making a very embarrassing typo.
The Declaration of Independence typo you just mentioned, which actually was an autographical thing because it was written by hand, but it looks from the, and you give some picture examples in the book, it looks like somebody essentially tried to use whiteout.
Yeah, it kind of does, actually. Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how they covered it up or how they, you know, actually corrected it. But yeah, I mean, in 2010, the Library of Congress, they did a bunch of, it's called spectral photographic imagery research, and they found that actually in the line, "our fellow citizens," the word "citizens" was actually originally written down, as you say, by hand, written down as "subject," which, you know, doesn't really seem to chime with the spirit of the Declaration of Independence. But, you know, obviously, you know, there's many ways that could have happened. There are all sorts of, to me, very outlandish theories about, you know, Freudian slips and, you know, arguments about the extent to which Jefferson was secretly a monarchist. But I think probably what happened was he was writing it and he made a mistake, and then they corrected it. And, you know, a lot of the time that's what these terribly embarrassing history-altering typos come down to. At the end of the day, we're all human, and sometimes it's terrible when it happens, but sometimes we do make mistakes.
Well, given the pressure to keep costs down, and of course we've been hearing about the demise of the publishing industry basically since the Gutenberg Bible rolled off the press, are editors in shorter supply? I mean, are we seeing more typos these days, even though we have things like autocorrect?
I would say that we certainly don't see more typos in books. I mean, I'm always astounded by how much care goes into a book. I've worked in publishing here in London for the best part of a decade. And, you know, as well as obviously the editors and the authors checking the book very carefully, it goes to a copy editor, then it goes to a proofreader, then it's checked again in-house. So generally, you know, books now don't have that many errors. What we find with autocorrect, though, when you're texting or emailing, is that they can actually introduce lots of new errors into your text. And that's not something anyone really wants to live with. And maybe later on we can look at some of those examples.
Typos, they make us human. Think of all the ways in which our snazzy new smartphones autocorrect words into meanings that we did not mean at all. This is a pretty rich vein, and we'll mine that further when we return to this interview from 2014 on the Jefferson Exchange right after a break. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, I'm Milt Radford. Change a single letter in a phrase and singing with the choir becomes sinning with the choir, or the United States becomes the untied states. Typos are fun for everyone but the person committing them. Scottish writer and editor Drummond Moyer compiled a bunch in a book called Just My Typo. He visited the Exchange in 2014, and today we return to that interview with the warning that we can't take any new phone calls or emails today. Here's Jeffrey
Drummond,
Riley.
Is there one particular shining example, one typo above all others that always makes you laugh?
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, one of my favorites actually comes from a kid's homework. I've got a whole chapter in the book on kids' typos. One of them wrote in his homework, "Jesus was born because Mary had an immaculate contraption." And, you know, that always cracks me up. Another one that I really like comes from an old book, an old novel called The Parting by Millicent Hemming. And it goes like this: "I am certain of one thing. Whatever may come between us, and wherever he may be on earth, Arthur will always remember that I love ham."
Gee, the A for the I.
Yeah, it's so easily done. It's so easily done. And some of the other fun kids' ones include a kid who wrote that Benjamin Franklin said, "A horse divided against itself cannot stand," which when you think about it actually makes perfect sense. And another one was that Abraham Lincoln apparently said, "In onion there is strength rather than in union." So, yeah, there are so many of them. And, you know, as I say, it was very fun compiling the book. There's about 300 of them in the book, and I keep coming across more and more of them.
Oh, it's just such a rich vein. And we have an email here from Earl in Grants Pass, Oregon, who headlines his email, "The Greatest Typo of All Time." He's talking about the King James Bible from 1631. Yes. Okay. So you know the story. Can you tell it to us?
Yeah. I'm assuming it's the same one. Yeah. So there was a Bible printed in England in 1631 that in Exodus, when he's listing the Ten Commandments, they managed to leave the word "not" out of the seventh commandment. So it came out in this printed Bible in the 17th century as "thou shalt commit adultery." And it became known as the Wicked Bible. It was burned, and it cost lots of money. The printers were fined by the king. I assume that's the one that your listener is referring to?
That's exactly right. And in fact, he points out that there is only one copy in the United States in Branson, Missouri.
Oh, is that right? I didn't even know that. Fantastic.
See, country music, Branson, and the Wicked Bible. It seems like a good place to have the Wicked Bible, Branson. It's a big entertainment capital.
Well, it's great because I came across it. There's this amazing company called Peachtree based in Georgia. And their job is to proofread Bibles. That's all they do. They don't proofread other books. They proofread one book only. They spend all their time proofreading the Bible. And I wrote to them to say, you know, it's amazing that you guys exist. Do you have any fun examples? And I worried after I wrote to them that they might, you know, maybe take offense and think I was treating it all a bit lightly. But they actually sent back pages and pages worth of very, very funny examples from Bibles over the centuries. So there's a nice one from the book of John. It's meant to say, "We know that thou art the Holy One." And it was printed as, "We know that thou ate the Holy One." There's another one. It's meant to be "rejoice and be exceedingly glad." Glad as in happy. But it came out as "rejoice and be exceedingly clad," as in the clothes you're wearing. So, yeah, there's lots of very fun biblical ones particularly.
That's really cool. I was going to ask if they approached it with such rectitude that they wouldn't possibly consider sending you the outtakes, but they did.
No, yeah, it's just, it's always heartening, you know, as an editor, it's always heartening to know that there are people out there who, you know, care as much as you do about, you know, everything being absolutely correct in a book. And the idea that there's a company out there somewhere who spends their entire time just proofreading one book, I thought that was brilliant. And you get a lot of very funny sort of church-related ones. So there's a magazine called Church World, and they, a few years ago, they had an article about a couple who got married. And it ended with this phrase: "They were married and lived happily even after." Which, you know, I think for anyone who's married, they'll immediately see why that's funny.
Right. Yes, you can tell I've been married for a while myself. Our guest is Drummond Moyer. His book is Just My Typo. It's a collection of typographical errors, some of the best from around the world and through history as well. Here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I have three. Two are from newspapers, one from a book. Do you want the references?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, the two from the newspapers are both from the Oregonian in the 1970s. One was a column written by Mary McGrory. I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was about some small Middle Eastern country, perhaps Qatar, where she quoted the leader of the country as saying, "We are cheating our own system."
As opposed to creating our own system?
Yes. And the other one was in an article from, I think, Fox News Service, but I'm not certain, Cox News Service, that was printed in the Oregonian, and it was about redwood trees. And they were having fires to allow the redwood trees' cones to open up, because that's required for the cones to germinate. And they said that some environmentalists were worried that the fires would harm the life-bearing cadmium layer of the redwood trees.
Instead of cambium, yeah.
Right. And so I took it around showing it to people saying, "Here, you thought that cadmium was a poisonous heavy metal. It turns out it's the life-bearing layer of redwood trees."
That's a particularly eagle-eyed spot. Very good.
Yeah, that is. That's a very detailed one.
And the third one is from a book written by a man who informed us in the preface to the book that if we didn't learn calculus, we would end up being burger flippers. And he then went on to say that the Roman Empire didn't have calculus, and that's why it was destroyed in 426 B.C.
Uh-huh. Right, gosh. So he got his history slightly wrong there.
And I copied the page, mailed it to the publisher, and told him I hope he got the calculus right.
Thanks for the examples, Mark. That's some great stuff. And this really is kind of a cottage industry. I mean, Mark would not be the only person who had taken his own clippings of stuff that was just too outrageously funny to pass up on saving, Drummond.
No, I'm sure. I mean, as I say, like when I was putting the book together, I wrote to a bunch of people saying, "Oh, do you have any examples?" And I was overwhelmed with the response. I got some really great ones back. So I think it's something everyone enjoys doing. I mean, somebody sent me a newspaper clipping from a Scottish newspaper, and the headline was, "Police call off a search for 20-year-old man who is believed to have frowned." rather than drowned, obviously. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, people say Scotsmen are miserable. We're not that miserable.
Right. Do a sense of humor there, too. You know, I was trying to remember, we had a great response the last time we did something like this, and I went back to look at what it was. It was a couple of guys in the United States who went on what they called the Great Typo Hunt, and they were looking
at
signs.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. Have you run across them?
They actually sent me a nice endorsement for my book, which is very kind of them. I thought they did it. They did a great job. That must be very entertaining what they did. Sadly, I did most of my research kind of from my desk. I didn't actually go on any kind of exciting or dangerous or adventurous hunt. But absolute credit to them. They did a great job.
Our guest on the Jefferson Exchange is Drummond Moyer. His book is Just My Typo, From Sinning with the Choir to the Untied States. It's the American edition of a book that he came out with in the UK 2 years ago with some great typographical errors and some wonderful examples of ways in which people said things they never intended to say in the first place. I noticed you have a recurring feature in the book called My Favorite Typos.
Yeah,
from a bunch
yeah.
of how'd you choose the people?
Sorry?
How did you choose the people to feature in My Favorite Typos?
I didn't really choose them specifically. It was more that when people writing in, you know, if they sent in a typo that was a particularly fun one, and particularly it was people who were maybe slightly well known, quite a lot of celebrities and writers wrote in with their favorite typos. So it was really that. I'm just flicking through the book, and in all honesty, I'm trying to find one I can read out on the air. Without offending anyone, because some of them are slightly risque.
Try the one on page 8.
Here's one. Here we go. So this is one. There was a guy who wrote to me about a parking sign, and this was a parking sign. It was meant to say, "Absolutely no parking, full stop. Offenders will be prosecuted." The only problem was that they'd missed out the full stop. So this parking sign said, "Absolutely no parking, offenders would be prosecuted." And obviously that led to complete chaos. There's another quite fun one, a similar kind of thing, a sign that said, "Illegally parked cars will be fine," rather than "will be fined."
Right.
Says they will be fine. So you think, okay, phew, I can park anywhere I like.
That's wonderful. There's another one on page 8 from Katrina McPherson. It's a little risque, but, it can still be safe for radio.
I'd be delighted to. Katrina McPherson is a British novelist who we publish at Hodder, actually. She's fantastic, and she very kindly sent me this. I'll read it out just verbatim. "I once found the following typo while editing one of my Dandy Gilver mysteries. The context is that Dandy, a respectable, gently born sleuth from the 1920s, hears the door of an adjacent room slam. I meant to write, 'I opened my own a crack and put my eye to it.' Only I'd missed out the word A. I'm ashamed to tell you how long I laughed for." So if you can work out, she actually wrote, "I opened my own crack and put my eye to it," which is, which is just a fantastic image. A similar one I got sent from an author was, it goes like this. "I wondered if we would ever shake him off. But eventually the size of her bottom began to bore him. So rather than the sight of her bottom, it was the size, S-I-G-H-S, of her bottom, began to bore him." So again, that's a fairly arresting but rather comical image, hopefully, providing you have a good sense of humor.
Some of this stuff is even funnier when somebody reads it aloud than it is if you're just looking at it on paper.
I think so, yeah, fantastic. I mean, the one I really like, actually, is the we mentioned autocorrect earlier. You know, when you're on your phone and you're typing a message and then it comes up with a word that you really didn't intend to write. Most of these really couldn't be read out on the radio, sadly. But there is one that I particularly like. This is a guy who's or a girl who's texting their friend. Their friends had an argument with their boyfriend, and this person's texting them to console them. She says, "Don't worry, seriously. He's crazy about you, and he loves you so much. He told me the other day that you're the first girl he had ever thought about the Führer with." And it's obviously meant to be future, but yeah, that was quite a fun one. And so there are various other ones that the autocorrect chapter that I fear I would get my wrist slapped if I read them out this early in the morning.
It's true. There are it's not that early, but yes, I appreciate the rectitude there. The autocorrect stuff is pretty amazing because the words that get substituted. I should add to this. I had a phone in my use for a while that I had to borrow from the Brazilian exchange student in our neighborhood. So it was autocorrecting in Portuguese, which made things that much more interesting.
That's an extra challenge. Brilliant.
Absolutely. So it brings us back to a question about technology. So autocorrect creates things that you didn't intend to do. It seems like by this point in history, so many people are using programs that have spell check and stuff that they should be getting corrections on what they're doing.
Yeah, they can. And, you know, obviously spell check does catch a lot of things. You know, spell check is very handy. I think the trouble is that when people try and use their technology without thinking it through quite so clearly. So one of the fun examples I got was a novelist who'd written a novel, and the main character in the book was a teenager named David. And just before they went to press with his novel, the author said, "Oh, I'm really sorry. Can I change the main character's name? Because I've just had a son. His name is Sam. So could I change the main character's name in the book to Sam?" So his publisher said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. That's easy. We'll do a thing called global correct or global search and replace, which is a bit like spell check. You know, it's a computer program, and
yeah, the find and replace function.
You just type in the word and then you put in replace, and it goes through the whole document, does it for you in seconds. So they changed all the Davids to Sam, and they thought, great, that was easy, fantastic. After they went to press, and once the book came in from the printers, they realized that there's a scene in the book when the main character goes to Florence in Italy and goes to see the famous Michelangelo statue. Michelangelo's, not Michelangelo's David, it's now been rendered Michelangelo's Sam. So you know, that's an example of, you know, using a technology incorrectly. I mean, the other thing that happens a lot on computers as well as spell check is that you get spaces in the wrong place. They're called breaks. We call them breaks in publishing, which it just means that a line has been, you know, taken across too early, or a space has been put in the wrong place. So one example I came across was somebody meant to use the phrase "the masses," as in, you know, the crowds of people, but the space is put in the wrong place. Instead of "the masses," it came across as "them asses," which, you know, really, really wasn't what the guy intended to write at all.
No. Drummond Moyer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Just My Typo. You can join us with your versions of typographical errors that made you laugh. 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782. What is an oxycretin? At first, I thought this was a misspelling of something else, like somebody tried to spell OxyContin and came up with this instead. But there really is a term called oxycretin, I gather.
Yeah, so basically, an oxycretin is a figure of speech where it contains two opposite words within the same word. So you might have heard of an oxymoron. An oxymoron is a figure of speech where you have, you know, two contradictory terms in the same phrase. So an oxymoron would be living dead or open secret or old news. An oxycretin is where you have it all in the same word, and by removing just one letter, the whole word switches to the opposite meaning. So an example of an oxycretin would be one and none. You know, there's just one letter different there. But if you said one survived, if you meant to write that, but you typed none survived, obviously the meaning is completely the opposite. Another example would be charmless and harmless, or laughter and slaughter, covert and overt, And the last one I have here is reign and resign. You know, if you said the newly crowned queen declared immediately that she would reign in style, that means one thing. But if you typed it wrong and put the newly crowned queen declared immediately that she would resign in style, the meaning is completely the opposite.
And after reading this section, I have to admit that the song going through my head was the old Motels song, Take the L Out of Lover and It's Over.
That's exactly it, yeah. That's exactly right.
So there's also a section here on hidden typos, and the great example given is James Joyce's Ulysses. Why were so many of these typos discovered years after the original publication of Ulysses?
To be honest, I mean, what happened with the Ulysses, as far as I can understand it, is that because it's such a complicated book, a lot of them just weren't actually spotted. I mean, Joyce actually said himself in the months running up to publication, he said, working as I do amid piles of notes at a table in a hotel, I cannot possibly do this mechanical part with my wretched eye and a half. So what he's describing there is when the author is sent early page proofs of their book, which is essentially the book before it's actually bound up into a book, and they're given a chance to check it. Now, for anyone who's seen or read Ulysses, they'll know that it's a very long book. It's 265,000 words, but it's also written in a way that's incredibly difficult to understand. It's a kind of very experimental, very impressive stream of consciousness technique that Joyce really pioneered, and it had a huge influence on modern literature. But, you know, someone who's reading Joyce's Ulysses very, very closely, even, you know, you can be the cleverest guy in the world, you can be the best read guy in the world, but anyone reading Ulysses is going to struggle to always work out what's going on because it's very, very complex. So what happened was that a lot of people just didn't notice that there was typos until a scholar in the 60s called Jack Dalton shocked everyone by saying that a lot of these things are actually just plain old typos.
Drummond Moyer, the guest, Just My Typo, the book, in an interview from 3 years ago here on the Jefferson Exchange. You'll hear more fun examples of fingers gone astray on keyboards and screens when we return right after a break. Final segment on today's Exchange. I'm Milt Radford. Scottish author, publisher, and editor Drummond Moyer has seen many typographical mistakes over the years, plenty from his own fingers. He compiles some real beauts in his book, Just My Typo. Jeffrey Riley interviewed him here 3 years ago, and we return to that interview now.
So, Drummond, was it the case of people just thought that Ulysses was trying something, that James Joyce was trying something stylistic in Ulysses with some of his typos, or trying to create new words a la Shakespeare, or what was the reason given up until somebody pointed out a bunch of typos?
I don't think anyone really noticed there were typos. I mean, there's one of them, for example, bread is printed as beard in the 1922 text. Now that's the kind of thing where in the context of a very difficult or confusing or elliptical piece of prose, you might not notice that, you know, bread is meant to be beard. So I don't think it's that people kind of were aware of these mistakes and assumed he was trying to do something clever. I think it's just that in a lot of the passages of the book that are, you know, slightly more impenetrable and slightly difficult to understand, people just didn't realize that these mistakes had gone in.
There's a whole chapter in here on journalism mistakes, and actually there could probably be easily a whole book on that. I mean, are you surprised there aren't many more of these?
To be honest, the main challenge I had was kind of filtering the typos because there were so many. And, you know, I thought it should only really be a short book, and I only want to include the ones that are kind of really, really funny. But the journalism chapter was difficult because there are so many from the press. And you can understand why. You can see, you know, they're obviously working to very tight deadlines, and they're turning around copy very quickly. Shall I give you a few of my favorite journalism ones?
Absolutely.
So during Woodrow Wilson's presidency, the Washington Post was credited with what's been described as the most famous newspaper typo in D.C. history. They intended to report that President Wilson had been, quote, entertaining his future wife, Mrs. Galt, but instead wrote that he had been, quote, entering her. I know we don't want to get too risque for Thursday morning, but, that's a particularly fun one. A similar one happened, actually, in the Evening Star This is in the late 60s. There was a Washington businessman named John Hettinger who chaired the first appointed D.C. council. And after giving a speech to the council of governments, he spoke to a reporter from the Evening Star. And what he said very clearly was, I want to know their views. I want to know their views. The next morning, the Star instead reported his comment rather provocatively as, I want to know their wives. And again, you can kind of see how that would creep in, but it's typos like that that make you think, you know, I swear that was deliberate. You know, it's too funny to have been done accidentally.
But I didn't even think about it until this moment that you have the same letters for views and wives. You just type them in different orders, and you get a totally different word.
It's exactly that, yeah. And that's really the joy of the typo. I mean, there's lots of examples of, and I put a few in the book of, you know, where you have entire passages of text in the wrong place, or you have entire, you know, paragraphs in the wrong place. But I think for something to be a genuine typo, it needs to be a single letter or a single space or a single punctuation mark in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That really helped narrow the field a bit then, didn't it?
It does, yeah. And that, it gives you stuff like, you know, when Fox News reported that, you know, Osama bin Laden had been assassinated, the headline was, Obama bin Laden dead. It just beggars belief, really.
It really does. And some of these, it looks like often the corrections can be as funny as the original mistakes. When the paper goes back and says, whoops, we made a mistake.
Yeah, that happens. I mean, there was the British newspaper, The Sun, got very angry at Gordon Brown, who was then Prime Minister, for writing a letter to the mother of a British soldier who'd been killed, and he misspelt the name. And The Sun, did a big article, very angry article, complaining that he'd spelt the name wrong and saying it was unacceptable. And what The Guardian, a rival newspaper, pointed out later was that The Sun had actually spelt the name wrong as well. So that kind of thing does happen. And, you know, there's a thing in publishing called Murphy's Law, which is if you complain about a spelling mistake, if you try to be clever and point out a typo, you will yourself make a typo. So that's something to always be aware of.
That's a pretty good law. Let's take a call here. We have Alex and Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Just My Typo with its compiler, Drummond Moyer.
Hi. Hey, akin to the typo and the spelling check, we have two other places that create a lot of fun. One is the voice recognition software.
Okay.
They do some wonderful distortions, and one of them I don't even remember what I was trying to say, but it ended up changing the end of my sentence to, I will not take Jade the Rat. And my recipient of the email, I didn't catch it, wrote back and said, well, maybe one of your cats will. And then the other that is fraught with possibility of starting wars is the language translation software. And I don't know if you've ever tried that, but one way you can check how badly the translations are is if you translate your text from English into a language you're not familiar with and then have it translated back, you'll see how badly mangled it was. And one of our funnier ones was, we sent a letter to a friend named Dusty, and it began the salutation with, Dear Dusty, which turned out to be translated as, Esteemed Powdery. So I use language translation software extremely carefully with small declarative sentences, and it seems to not end up starting wars when used that way. Two other places that you can have a lot of fun. The voice recognition software will give you a lot of laughs. Oh. And I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for that, Alex. Those are some great examples. Drummond, you probably have had some experience with these as well.
I have. Yeah, I've not really used the translate function much, but I do have a chapter in the book which is typos in other languages, you know, where people have translated things into English incorrectly. Because, again, you know, none of these are intended to poke fun at anyone. They're just there to celebrate, you know, hopefully something that's quite funny. So there was a sign at the front desk of a hotel in Europe, and it said, please leave your values at the front desk, rather than please leave your valuables at the front desk. And that maybe makes you wonder what goes on in that hotel. A different hotel had an advert that said, French widow in every room, rather than French window. And again, really makes you wonder what goes on in some of these European hotels. There was a Swedish hotel as well that had a sign that said, please do not disturb the guest in the next room, rather than the guest in the next room. So, there's lots of fun ones in when you translate.
I should point out there are pictures in the book, too. And in fact, the chapter you're talking about, the Lingua Franca chapter, begins with a picture from a road crew in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, just painting a stop sign on the pavement.
Yep, and they managed to misspell the word stop. So it's in gigantic letters, and it's a four-letter word, but unfortunately it's misspelled. So I think it's S-O-T-P.
Yeah, SOTP instead of stop, right?
SOTP, indeed. What I found really the most fun thing was Richard Dawkins, the scientist and author. Most of the time when an author spots a typo, they're justifiably cross about it. Richard Dawkins spotted a typo in one of his books in proof stage. So it was before it had actually gone to the printers. And he'd been trying to write about the particle accelerator at CERN, also known as the Large Hadron Collider. And he was writing about how moved he was to see it in all its glory. But in the proofs, it came out not as the Large Hadron Collider, but as the Large Hardon Collider. And when he spotted that, he found it so funny that he actually asked them to leave it in. But the publisher quite rightly said, no, of course we're going to correct that. But I thought it was it showed a great spirit that he was, he was enjoying it so much.
I hadn't heard that part of the story before. I had heard about the Large Hadron Collider, but not that he wanted. He did actually campaign to keep it in the book that way.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was just being funny. But it's very heartening to see such a serious writer taking so much pleasure in it. I remember having I published a journalist a couple of years ago who'd written a book, and in the opening line she'd written about how the promise of new technology means for the first time in history you could have a reliably informed public. And in the book, in the proofs, luckily not the final book, a very common typo came out. Instead of public, it said pubic. So for the first time in history, you could have a reliably informed pubic. And again, she found that very funny, and we corrected it, and there wasn't any sort of problem. Occasionally, they're just too funny, and despite all the efforts we go to, and all the efforts the authors and the proofreaders and the copy editors go to, sometimes one of them slips through, and just occasionally, they're funny enough that you just have to laugh.
We talked about that there's a whole recurring feature in the book called My Favorite Typo, where people have sent stuff into you, and they just tell you what their favorite typos are. One of the other features, though, is a continuing feature called When Typesetters Lose It. So what's going
on there?
Oh,
yeah. When typesetters lose it, this would be really hard to read out in the radio, actually. Essentially, these are just some favorite examples of where I said earlier that, strictly speaking, I define a typo as something where a single letter or punctuation mark is in the wrong place at the wrong time. Whereas occasionally, they go beyond that and they're just too funny. When typesetter lose it gag is basically just when a typesetter has gone completely crazy and what they've typed bears no resemblance to anything that could possibly be a language. So one example from the New York Morning Telegraph is the following text. On the other hand, Miss Weather had played steadily bomb, 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 bomb. So, you can imagine reading that and just thinking, what on earth is going on there? There's a lot of very similar ones. As I said, they're quite hard to read out because they're not particularly pronounceable words.
Well, for
but
example,
hopefully when you see them on the page, it'll be quite funny.
Well, but one of the other examples here, and it's right across the page from the one from the New York Morning Telegraph, is a headline from the sports section in the New Orleans Times-Picayune, which I assume is about a Jets-Patriots game, but it goes, Jets-Patriots, jump head goes, Heary, Bartle, Fliffle, Flavles, and, it just goes into total joke.
Again, that was another favorite, and I managed to get a photograph of that one as well, so that's quite fun too. I mean, I think what might have happened there is that I've never worked in newspapers, so I don't really know the details, but essentially, sometimes the sub-editor will be waiting for final copy before they go to press, so they'll just key in some letters to kind of hold the space, the idea being that you'll then put in the actual words before you press the print button. And I think occasionally that just doesn't happen and they manage to leave it off. So the Jets Patriot one is possibly one of those examples. Or it's just someone having a kind of silly joke and being very, very funny.
Well, yeah, the fact that it says jump head leads me to believe that there was, in fact, a jump head supposed to be there. You can see it's from, you know, continued from page B1 or something, but it just never got to it because I guess they didn't get the story in time. Here's a call from Caleb in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Drummond Moyer. He's the author of Dust My Typo.
Hi, good morning. I actually called in earlier. I'm in the car a lot today, and I keep hopping in and out and catching your programs, and I couldn't help but call in again. I had a really great story to share about a typo from when I was younger.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
It took place in church, and we had this one particular songbook that was printed by the church. It was a compilation of different songs, that some written by our members and other different artists. So it wasn't like a professionally published songbook. And I just remember one of the songs, there was a line in there, and I don't remember the context of the lyric, but it was supposed to be grown and emerging, something about people growing and emerging. And again, I don't remember the context, but the misprint was brown and emerging.
Oh, God.
And we were kids. I was 8 or 9 or 10, and it was the most unbearably laughable moment. Every time we had that song, we were, you know, it's hard for kids to focus in church anyway, and I don't know why they didn't fix it promptly. It was in the songbook for a long period of time, and we just couldn't hold it together whenever we sang that song.
So instead of grown and emerging, brown and emerging. Yeah, I can see why a kid would get kicked out of that one. Caleb,
yeah,
thanks. Good to hear from you again. Drummond, that's one of the categories in the book that, we're running out of time here. I want to just get to things. I never even thought about stuff like live closed captioning. For newscasts.
Yeah, closed captioning. So, there was an LA Angels Tampa Bay Rays game, and the closed caption came up, and it was meant to say, "And the hitter will be Carlos Pena." And it typed up as, "And the Hitler will be Carlos Pena." And, you know, that how on earth did that happen? I mean, either he'd been watching Downfall, or, you know, he just thought it'd be funny to accidentally type Hitler, or it was a genuine mistake. But yeah, that's an example. There's also quite a fun one involving the Dalai Lama that I don't think I can really read out on air. But
all right, we have another offering here from an email that points out the sentence in the president's Thanksgiving proclamation in the United States last Thanksgiving. It says it was supposed to say, "This Thanksgiving Day, let us forge deeper connections with our loved ones." Read instead as, "This Thanksgiving Day, let us forego deeper connections with our loved ones."
Very good.
One letter
that's
difference.
Up there, there was a parish newsletter that said the bride and groom stood at the altar and exchanged cows.
Good place to end. The book is called Just My Typo. Drummond, thanks so much for writing it and for giving
thanks,
us such
Jeffrey.
A good time today. Take care.